Shut up and sit down.
So I become kind of famous for my signature catchphrase, whammy!
You are listening to The Dialed Podcast with Matt LeGrand, Evan Price, Lance Hepler, and Jake Von Turing. Do you know what is the hardest part of learning to ride a bike? The pavement.
I'm all about having fun. Maybe go to SeaWorld, take my pants off.
Take it easy, champ. Why don't you stop talking for a while?
Maybe sit the next couple plays out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm gonna quit saying things when they crop up there in the old skull, huh?
This is gonna be a f***ing bloodbath, Tom. There will be medical tents, ambulances, face painting. No doubt a lot of people you know and love are going to die.
Hi, and welcome back to the Dial Podcast. I am Jake Von Turing, and I'm here with Lance Friggin' Hepler.
Lance Friggin' Hepler. I like that moniker better than Lance Romance. Just Lance friggin' Hepler.
You know everybody said it at one point in time. They're like, friggin' Hepler. Friggin' Hepler. Lance friggin' Hepler's calling me right now. He's sending me a voicemail. So.
I might put you as that in my phone now, actually.
Lance friggin' Hepler.
Oh, we got Munchies Price over here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I like that. We can go with that. I just had, man, is this the Big Tex? What are these things called again?
That thing was as big as your face, whatever it was.
It's a sticky bun, but it's like the Big Tex. Do you remember the company? They just make massive processed cinnamon rolls, basically.
But you put that thing up to take a bite, and it like eclipsed your whole head.
Yeah,
I'm like, Evan, what are you putting in your body?
They're big.
And you chase it down with some
ghost. This is the Sour Patch flavor, the blue raspberry. It's kind of gross, to be honest. Not a fan.
Sour Patch.
Oh, but it says natural caffeine on it, whatever the heck that means. But yeah.
As opposed to... Yeah. Processed.
Isn't caffeine generally always processed?
Unnatural caffeine.
I wouldn't even know what unnatural caffeine
it's
means.
It's called crack.
Yes. I think so. Maybe that's the natural, actually. Yeah. The original Coca-Cola.
Oh, good Lord. And got some, what else you got going on there?
This is Gardetto's. This is kind of my pre-swim, just carbs.
Snacking.
As much as possible. Yeah. I'm still just trying to eat as much as I possibly can here. Shriveling away.
And last but not least, we got Matt LeGrand.
I just finished the race and I was like, that sucked. Crashed a couple times. My bike handling isn't that great.
I was thinking about this.
And I thought I was
many times.
We got no Matt.
We miss you, Matt.
Matt is somewhere in North Carolina as we speak.
I thought he was in Michigan.
He spent some time in Michigan.
Oh, and then they went over to North Carolina.
He's in North Carolina.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
So. What's it like in North Carolina?
Humid.
August.
North Carolina's humid right now.
Extremely.
Yeah. North Carolina's beautiful, though. The Blue Ridge Parkway that goes through North Carolina is one of my favorite areas to ride.
Is our fair little ginger friend going to like wither away and melt into nothing?
He will die. I mean, the fact that he's from Alabama always blew my mind. I'm like, how were you living in Alabama? How'd you win a state championship in Alabama at some point?
As you get used to it.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Let's do a little backpedaling. You boys raced this past week. I did not. So I'm going to backpedal first.
That's a good idea.
I did one ride last week.
Really?
One ride. That's it.
Well, you guys were at Lost Lake, right?
Yes.
For a little bit, yeah.
I took my normal Monday off. We did our gravel ride on Tuesday. We did our heat acclimation gravel ride.
We went out at 6 p.m. at 98 degrees.
It was 101 in my van when I left my van. It was so hot for me to even ride there on my bike. I just got in the van and drove down there so I didn't have to ride that extra 6 miles.
It almost didn't happen for you, too.
I was running a little bit late. It's a struggle to get there.
But you flatted at mile two.
Yeah. Our teammate Laura Mullen and Jerry and I think Randy Frost, I think the culmination of those three people loaned me all of the things that I need to make it work so that I could get a tube in there and to continue on doing the ride. But that was a good little ride.
It was good. It was fun little ride. There was only five or six of us.
Six of us,
because it was hot.
Keep it at speed and you get that evaporative cooling and you're feeling pretty good.
Cycling is a way better option than trying to run in that. So
Missed the lab ride on Wednesday because I was too busy trying to get everything done so I could get off to Lost Lake. And I had these grand plans of getting up to Lost Lake and riding my gravel bike all over the place. It was 98, 99 degrees, hot, humid, and I was having some issues with, I put a new front tire on there, and it wasn't holding air. I think that there might be something wrong with the rim tape. I didn't have the things that I needed to fix it on site. And I didn't want to chance being out on a 50-mile ride and having it go flat on me. I didn't want to do any of that stuff. Ed Dudlick and his wife were up there and at the same time, and we both had a plan to go do a ride. And it's, I don't know, it's like 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning. And he's like, I'm bagging this ride.
Yeah. And it's too hot.
Yeah. Edward Dudlick.
Yeah.
Edward.
He goes by Edward.
Edward.
So. I call him Eddie all the time. No wonder he hates me on the other.
Sorry, Ed. Anyhow, he said he was back in the ride, and it was probably because he wanted to go a little bit earlier, and it was like already 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning. And
plans, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, I totally get it.
It was probably getting hot. I mean, by like 10 a.m., how hot was it?
I don't know. It was already probably.
Because you guys were being under the trees. It was like baking under the trees.
High 80s-ish already.
That humidity's probably been just hot.
And it was just more appealing to let's go sit by the lake and do lake stuff and stay cool. Yeah, so
just too hot.
Ended up doing that, and I ended up mostly just hiking the whole time I was up there because the bike wasn't reliable and I didn't want to tear it apart and it was too hot. And I'm just like, screw it. This is going to be my off week. So
it's the middle of, I mean, we're in.
It's okay.
No, nobody's gaining finish right now. The only thing you're gaining is heat acclimation. If you're outside, you're getting heat acclimated.
Well,
so there you
hoping
go.
Hoping to race this weekend.
What's it's going to be too hot. I don't think I'm going to go.
Is this the road
I'm
race
just,
stage?
I'm just going on the record. I don't want to be out racing for 60 miles in heat.
And what is it supposed
like
to be?
1 in the afternoon, too. I think our field.
I don't know what time it is, but that's just, it's hot. And is there going to be neutral support out there? Are there going to be feed zones? Or, you know, how are we organized for that? So I don't know. If it's going to be that hot, I'm out. So
yeah.
I'm just being a big Sally pants right now.
Yeah, Saturday, Sunday looks hot. Give it a couple days. Maybe it'll come down. Yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah.
TBD.
Anyway, during the week, it looks fine.
So that's my week. We don't need to hear any more about that. Camping was spectacular. Caught a crap ton of fish. Took some cool pictures and hiked with my wife and hung out with my kids and did all the campy stuff and
Sounds terrible. Highly advise
it. So just way too many people at Lost Lake. Lost Lake, stop it.
That's what I saw from
Becky. Stop it. Way too many people up there over the weekend.
You got to find a new lake.
Yeah, well, everyone's trying to escape the heat.
You
got to
find a new lake.
Close enough.
Everybody's got that lake. Yeah, you got to find a new lake now.
It's not lost anymore.
No, yeah, you got to.
It's been found.
Yeah, found lake. Here we go.
Too many people. I have a hilarious story about us trying to find you on Strava in middle of nowhere, Utah. I spent 2 hours randomly searching Strava segments. I was like, I'm going to find Lance. David was like, just try and find Lance.
Just on some random segment.
Go take a segment from
Telluride. I don't even know where in Utah we are. We are in BFU is where we were.
Well, to get to Telluride, did you went through Moab or Grand Junction?
Moab.
Did you
not
drive?
Grand Junction.
David drove. We were in a rental together.
They flew to Salt Lake.
Salt Lake and then drove.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Instead of going to Denver, it was actually shorter to go to Salt Lake and then to Telluride.
All right.
Great drive. I love that drive. But we were like, man, if you get a flat out here, you will die.
How about you carry on and just you start your back pedal?
Okay, I'll just go straight in my back
pedal. Wait, no. So did you find me on a segment anywhere in Utah?
No, and I tried so hard. I did want to tell a joke.
There's lots of segments.
We're in Lance's homeland here. We need to ask people if they know if they Lance.
Can't you go to Lance and look at can you look at other people's heat maps of where they've ridden?
Oh, I should have tried that.
Oh, I don't know.
I'm sure we were close to around some of the very random points you've gone.
Well, I've ridden all over Moab and all over.
We were in our way to Moab west to east, so we were heading in that way. Yeah. Or we were going from what would be northwest of there down into Moab. But yeah. Beautiful, but my God, that is desolate. I mean, there are some areas we're driving through and you see an RV, you're like, there's no way somebody actually lives in that, right? Like, there's no way.
There's sections out there where there's nothing.
You're like, this is the hills have eyes, but the mountains have eyes is what this is.
So you made it to Telluride.
Yes.
Wait, before you tell the stories. Yes. So all I want to know is, how many times did you dab and how many times did you crash?
Because
that's what we were talking about.
Whatever amount you said, it's over. Because... As I tell a story, I will tell you.
We put the line at 3 crashes.
We said 3 crashes.
It was way over. I don't really remember how many times.
Seriously?
That went. Yes. Oh. Yes, it was. Well, okay, let me.
Mountain biking is hard.
There was a trust. You know, going into this, me and David both agreed. I had full respect on how hard mountain biking was going to be, but I could not actually I could not actually appreciate it until you try something like this. And then you realize you're like, wow, people who do mountain biking really well are really good at this sport.
To ride at speed.
Yeah. It would be like me practicing darts and then saying, go play pool. That's like basically what I just did was, hey, ride a road bicycle. Now go try and do mountain biking hard. I had a basic understanding of how limited my ability was going to this. I didn't understand how hard the actual Telluride course is. So Kit joked with me after, he's like, you were Leadville fit you could not have been any less prepared for Telluride, basically, which is a great life lesson because I went into this race terrified. Like I have, which is a great, you know, I was like, I'll get into the story, but I, this morning went to the Whisper Kids practice. And we were talking about their,
which is a running group, for,
running group locally for in teenagers. Vancouver that I coach with, Dave Caldwell, who's awesome local here. And he's got a lot of great kids there. And he was talking about race anxiety for especially the 5K, because a lot of the kids get really nervous going to their 5K. It's a longer race. It's a hard race. And I told them all, because I think they think me and a couple of the other college kids who like pace for them, like they, I think some of these kids get the impression of like, we just show up ready to go and not nervous ever for anything. And I was telling them, I was like, guys, I was having nightmares before this mountain bike race I just did. I was like, if you guys feel underprepared or scared going into a 5K, just remember Evan one time went into a race he had no business doing and made it out alive. Just barely, but made it out alive.
You ever thrown up before a race? Because I have.
I've never been. That's more of a stomach thing I've never
thrown
been.
Up. Really? I've thrown up before a race.
Usually once I'm on the morning of the race, I'm okay. It's the days before when I'm like, oh my God, what am I doing? But so, okay, me and David fly into Salt Lake City. We travel to Telluride. Nothing too bad happened outside of, you know, me trying to ask a few people if they knew Lance Hepler. No bites, but, you know.
Nobody knows me.
Strange enough, in the middle of nowhere, Utah, somebody would know you. But
it's unlikely, but not impossible.
No, and it's an interesting part of the country. You really get to see very small town America. Like, I mean, we're talking like probably 30 people live in some of these little towns here. Sure. Very interesting driving through those areas. Get to Telluride, it's beautiful. No wonder it costs so much to live there. It's beautiful and green, and you're surrounded by mountains. It does not get any better.
It's like in the bottom of a valley surrounded by mountains.
And it's crazy because it's arid around there, but in the valley, it's very green and beautiful and lush. Yeah. It's like this utopia type place almost. But got there, got to see Kit. Spending the whole weekend with Kit is great. I'm going to get so cheesy on this, but me and Kit have been very, we've been brother-like friends for a very long time. And doing this stuff with him is always a blast because it's some of the hardest things I've ever attempted in my life have been with Kit. And this probably went to number one on the list like right away. But I got a true appreciation of how good Kit actually is at mountain biking. So Kit will never brag about anything ever. And you would think he's just you don't get how good Kit is at something because he seems so loose and carefree about everything.
Sure.
But he coaches a few kids that are actually like Olympic level development type mountain biker. So Kit's ability on a mountain bike is very, very good. He is a mountain biker.
He lives where right now?
Denver. So he is a Colorado. Okay. So he's at the Mecca of mountain biking in America. Yeah. He is a coach there. So he is a very good mountain biker.
I searched for him on Strava and could not find him. Is he is he not on Strava?
He's got a smartphone last year.
Okay.
Now it's all making sense.
Kit got an email like a couple of years ago, I think. If it was up to Kit, he would live in Telluride and not in the city. He'd live like in the Telluride, like in the mountains there. So we get to race. I'll just fast forward to race morning. We're having a good time. We're all doing well. We do a practice ride, and the first section has like 8 miles a single track. And Kit was like, he's like, with mountain bikers, you want to make sure you see as much course as you can, which, sure, you know, was news to me. I'm like, okay, cool. So we go. I actually feel confident on this single track. It's kind of the rocky, steep little incline stuff into real flowy single track, rocky, steep climb, flowy. Yeah. He's giving me a lot of tips. I'm feeling a lot better than I did a couple weeks ago. Because every single time I go mountain biking, I'm learning something new. Every single time. My God. Like every single mountain bike ride, I probably get like a percent better because I'm so bad. I'm like just moving and learning. But I was actually feeling pretty good at that. Altitude, luckily for me, really does not affect me unless we're doing really high intensity efforts. So even though we're at 10,000 feet, I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah.
Poor David's pretty tired, but he's handling it well. David always he knows he struggles at altitude.
It was affecting David more than the other two.
We also now after the race realized it was, I think there were only 6 non-Colorado people there. So it is, I mean, this is a race for people who ride mountain bikes at altitude, and I do not feel that bill. So.
Well, the race for mountain bikers is Leadville.
Yes.
Which is not for a couple weeks.
No, and this was a lot of the guys going into Leadville. This is a hard training day for them getting ready to go into Leadville. And these are legit, I mean, these guys are mountain bikers. There's only 275 people doing this race. And 273 of them were good experienced mountain bikers. And then there was me and David. But we get to race morning, nice and early start. And guess who we see sitting on a bench right in front of us? Lachlan Morton. Right there. Just game to right in front race. Of us as we get there. And Kit's cool. Like, Kit doesn't care because Kit's, you know, he's like, oh, I'm just going to take a picture with Lachlan. Lachlan looks a little nervous, you know, but everything. Kit just sits right down next to him. He's like, hey, you mind my buddy takes a picture with you? So Kit has a picture with Lachlan that I'm going to be posting up actually soon.
Was he wearing an EF kit?
Yeah, EF kit and everything. He won by 23 minutes.
Oh, jeez.
Over another great guy in his 40s, Todd something. I forget his name.
Todd Wells?
Yeah, Todd Wells. Yeah. There was, as we realized, yeah. We were like, oh, they were really fast
Todd
people.
Wells, several times cyclocross national champion.
Yeah, and he had won Telluride, I think, once before, too. Yeah. But Lachlan just threw down the gauntlet. But so we get, you know, we start the race. How the race worked out is you go up on a road climb and then you get into the single track. So feeling great, feeling good. David knew to stay in himself. So he let me and Kit go. And the whole day I'm just planning on just having a blast with my friend. I'm like, I'm just going to stay with Kit as long as I possibly can. Like, we're just going to go on a 100-mile bike ride together, basically. Right. So we get into the single track. I obviously realize that in mountain bike races, you want to make sure you're in a position going into the single track where you're not going to need to pass people if you're not highly skilled.
Yes,
so
that is important tactic.
So I'm getting really comfortable and the guy in front of me is not a good climber by any means. And Kit is one person in front of us. Kit starts to pull away. I'm like, oh, I really want to go around this guy. We get to a tough section and he just turns his bike basically sideways. So that was my first dab. I didn't fall. I just had to dab down. I'm like, oh, this guy's slowing. And then he was getting competitive and just like still kept on going. So me and like the three people behind were having to wait behind this guy, but feeling moderately confident, get through the flowy single track section. Survived. And I'm like, you know, I'm like a C- right now on mountain biking, feeling good. Get to Kit. We wait for David. And then we're going down to Telluride Trail, I think, which is the beast of the climb. It is a green ski slope.
Okay.
So ridiculously steep. I mean, sure. Hilariously steep. Like you're almost like going, you're riding on the up to this climb. You're like, there's no way that's actually what we're going up. And it of course is. So I think somebody said the first mile is like over 20%. It's craziness. I mean, and just brutal Oof. Steepness. But Kit, Angie, Lance had given me good tips on how I put all my weight over that front wheel. And I'm so low over the bike at this point. I'm like, I'm grounding my bike here. I'm not sitting back like I would on a road bike or getting out of the saddle. I am grounding and pounding this thing.
Yeah.
And I made it up. So at one point, it was only me and one other guy that I was around. There's like 50 people on the climb around us. Everybody is walking except for Kit, me, and this other guy are still on the bikes. And of course, as I'm going up, I have to choose a really specific line. And two people who are just exhausted decide to walk their bikes directly into the line that me and this poor woman are like trying to ride up hard. So I didn't fall, but I had to dab at that point, start walking. Kit's a slow walker. Kit had to walk too at one point. So I get up to Kit and then we're riding together the rest of the climb.
Did you ever call out to those people? Hey, coming up on your left.
Yeah,
and passed you,
I did.
And they just didn't
and
move.
They moved left. No, they moved left. I said, I'm coming up on your left, and they both moved right into the line. I'm like,
come on,
man.
People.
I know, seriously. So, you know, we get to the top through this climb. It's great. David had told us at the base, he's like, hey, go until the next aid station, which I think was like mile 25. So then from there, you get into a lot of flowy single track, and I started to feel confident. Kits just pulls away from me on single track, so I just let him go. I find a person or two I'm working well with and get through the single track actually pretty well to where my confidence was feeling great. Cause I realized in mountain bike, I was like, man, my legs aren't tired at all.
Yeah.
Cause it's just so much. What I was starting to realize, I was like, I'm getting tired mentally all of a sudden.
You get leg rest when you're on the single track more or less.
And it was, you know, I mean like, and I think that that's where, you know, after the initial 8 miles and going up a climb that hard, I was like, oh no, my legs feel great, but I'm really now on the single track realizing the skill set required saves a ton of energy just from your whole body. So if you're relaxed and flowy on the mountain bike, you know, obviously you're saving a ton of energy. If you're me and stiff and trying not to die, you're wasting tons of energy. So mental energy. So we get through to the aid station and the guy there tells me, cause I'm having a great time at this point, me and Kit are joking around. And I tell the guy, I'm like, whoa, that was some tough stuff back there. And he kind of looks at me for a second, then like goes, oh man, well, this stuff coming up, man, like you might want to be careful. And he's this like deep woods Colorado guy. So he all of a sudden just kind of like gives me the little California shocker ball and goes, I'm going to cuss for a second here. Well, no, we'll go A word over tits, my man. And I'm sitting in my head because I'm at 12,000 feet elevation or 11,000, whatever we're at. And I'm like, my brain's not operating super well. So I'm like, cool. And I was like, keep on going. I was like, and I kept on playing over my head. I was like, what does he mean? I was like, oh, wait, is he talking about? And literally as the thought enters my head, we cross the road and go, and the trail drops off the face of the earth. It's just, you're looking.
And you don't have a dropper.
No.
That makes a difference.
Or skill.
that also makes a difference.
So this is where I realized, I'm like, this is mountain bike. This is the difference between me and all mountain bikers, is this is Mission Impossible to me. And so I just kind of send it over the first big descent. Somehow don't eat it. So I have this false confidence for a second that I'm like, oh my God, I might actually make it through this alive. And then we hit a right-hander, and then I overcorrect, and the memory is very fuzzy on this. I kind of ramp up accidentally, handlebars twist hard, and drive straight into my right quad, which is still a massive bruise and made running the last day very hard. And then I flip over and hit my head so hard I had ringing in my ears. So
boom, first crash, hit your head.
Yeah, so we're on concussion. What is this? Probably we're creeping up on number 20 here, probably, of distinguishable concussions. But people are passing me at this point. I kind of get myself, before people pass me, this my memory is shaking on this. There's a 65-year-old guy behind me. I only know it because I asked his age after the race. Coolest dude I'm probably ever going to meet in my entire life was during this race. This 65-year-old guy slams on the brakes right before me and goes, "Oh, S-word, my man, how you doing? Are you okay?" And is like, gets off his bike, is like grabbing me, like, "Dude, are you like
mid-race?"
Yeah,
he like mid-race.
He gets off his bike to make. I think that's how bad the crash was, because he was like, "Oh man, this guy might be in trouble." Because there were two other guys that really that ended up getting sent to the hospital on this descent. This guy, you know, super nice, gets me back on the bike. I try to get on the bike a little bit again, but I've completely lost confidence at this point. I kind of crash again, actually, because as I'm realizing now, my vestibular system was
messed up.
It wasn't good to begin with, and now we're talking even worse. So I get off and walk the last mile and a half of this descent. Walk this single track.
You
descent.
Walked down.
I walked down this descent.
Okay, race over.
Race is over by this point. I get there. Kit has him and the aides there, or the volunteers, all cheering my name because he's hilarious and one of my best friends ever.
He's the ringleader of ringleaders right here.
I am so out of it by this point. At this point, I'm still somewhat happy because I'm just like, oh, whatever. Like, yeah, I was like, Kit, don't let me quit, man. We're going to finish this 100 thing. And Kit told me at that time, he's like, I don't even want to finish. I just convinced you. I was like, yeah, man, sure.
Whatever you say, Evan.
Whatever you say, man. So we wait for, David actually had caught up to me by that point because he rode brakes down the whole descent, but that's how slow I was moving down this thing. And we all three get together. We're chugging along then. And I'm convinced at that point, I'm like, I think I still can make a second lap. We get to another 10 miles of single track. And it wasn't as technical as the single track before, but I got so mentally exhausted during that 10 miles. I literally told Kit at one point, I was like, I'm going to sell this mountain bike before we finish this race. I'm
going to leave it on the side of the trail.
I'm going to run the rest of this. I'll just barefoot run the rest of this. I got a better chance at handstanding home than I do riding a bicycle right now.
Oh, no,
and I told him, I was like, I might be the worst single track rider. Just all the negative thoughts in the world. And this is why, find yourself a good friend, anybody who's getting into bikes, because Kit the whole time just listened to me and he's like, shut up, man, you're fine. Like, I was like, no, Kit, I'm serious. Like, no, you know, shut up. And he just like stays with me the whole time. While Kit could have been going three times as fast as I was, could have finished that race and probably
he
would have been
punted
competitive.
On his race and just stayed
exactly.
with you.
Exactly.
Freaking A, Kit.
He's
That's a, pretty
he's
cool.
He's an amazing friend, my man. And so we get to the end of this. We decide to chop it after one lap because at that point I was like, that was out. Doing one lap was the most amazing thing I could do at that point for me. I was like, that was.
So one lap was basically half the race.
Yes. And in our defense, the first lap is significantly harder than the second lap. Okay. The first lap was brutal.
That.
Yeah, I know. But I'm saying we were talking with some other guys. And they were saying the second lap was hard because you're very tired by that point, but it was wider gravel roads. The climbs are more steady.
Okay.
The single track was not technical. So, I mean, if my life had depended on it, could Kid have convinced me? Sure. I'm sure I could have been convinced, but I'm glad with my leg actively swelling at that point, to the point where it was like a fluid sack in my right quad. I'm glad we decided not to. But super long story short, it was, you know, in the moment, it always feels like a way bigger defeat than it actually is. But realizing that was so much fun. If anything, just had an experience that now makes me realize how amazing true mountain bikers are. And
it just takes practice.
It does.
Evan.
It does. And it's a very specific skill set. It's a very specific skill set. So would I like to do mountain biking again? Sure, one day, but I can't put it into triathlon training season. Now what I'm realizing. It's
too dangerous to the rest of your season.
Yeah,
You've got another big race coming up.
Yeah.
What's coming up?
Santa Cruz and Augusta. So I have two pro races in
What about
weeks.
Something that's a little bit more tame? A little bit more.
Yeah. I mean,
I've never done it, but High Cascades would probably be a little bit more his jam. Cascades 100. I mean, it's mountain biking, but it's not quite as technical from what correct. He's describing.
It's just as much climbing. Maybe not. It's just as much climbing, but no long, big climbs, which is probably bad for you.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing that Kit was joking about. He's like, the race that would have been better for you would be a race that everybody else here would hate. He's like, any race that's single track, you're going to be terrible. I was like, if I made a race, I would have just gone multiple 3 mile climbs at 18% just over and over again.
Right.
But
gravel racing probably.
I think gravel race, and I'd even be fine doing gravel racing on a mountain bike. I don't care about the result. I would just go out there and have fun on a mountain bike. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I enjoy off-road riding, but it's a, you know, and I mean, you both know this, but it's a skill that you really have to practice and practice and practice. And in my training right now, I just don't have the time to get off the TT bike and really commit to, like, I need to become a mountain biker. But in my off season during the winter, I'm actually, when we don't have snow, I'm fully planning on still riding the mountain bike because I love it. It just has a bike handling tool.
You're a professional triathlete. You're not a professional mountain biker.
No.
So
that was Kit's joke all day. Whenever we were next to anybody and like at breaks and points, and Kit was blowing out, he's like, hey, you're out descending a professional athlete. They're like, what? And he was like, this guy does triathlon. I was like, yeah, that makes me less qualified to do mountain biking than anybody here who just mountain bikes. But yeah, it was an amazing experience. I'm actually really happy with how I handle altitude, to be honest. That was something I was glad to see.
That's good.
My altitude simulation stuff, I think is helping a little bit. Because it was high. I mean, that's, you know, you're going from sea level to 10, 11. I think the race even touches 12 at one point. Like, you're way up there. And
did Kit and David call it after one lap too? Or did
they
both did?
Oh, yeah,
you guys all stayed together at that point.
Absolutely. Yeah. Kit definitely could have made it second lap. Me and David, no chance. There was, we were canned at that point.
Too much, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, even that half a lap took you almost 6 hours.
That's 6 hours in the saddle.
Or,
it's a long time.
One, you know, the 50 miles took
somehow
you almost
we weren't
6 hours.
Either. There was like 20 people behind us somehow, which I don't know how. I was going, I mean, I walked into sand. I'm like, I don't know. And one of the, there were a couple hundred guys who were ways behind us and still finished the 100. Like 14 hours.
Yeah, just cranked it out.
It's like, good for you guys. That's amazing. But yeah, it was a blast.
I'm glad you didn't get hurt worse.
Yes, that could have been.
I'm glad you were smart enough to call it halfway, because it could have buried you for a few weeks.
I was looking back, I'm a little bit more concerned as to if I had had the concussion issues going into that second lap, I think would have gotten a little bit more significant. So I'm glad that we were smart enough to cut it at that point, or Kit was smart enough to cut it at that point.
So at least
the only
there by
functioning
yourself.
Member of the crew was able to.
Right on.
Oh my gosh.
Epler, you raced your bike too.
I did
a couple
race
times.
My bike. I raced a mountain bike.
You did. And did it much better.
I did all these rides with Jake. I did the gravel ride with Jake earlier in the day. I did the lab lunch ride, which we had some fiascos on that as well with some
flats. It came
back
and you guys were a total S show out there.
a little bit. It was super hot too. So, but I ended up, we had our short track Obra mountain bike championships on Saturday and our Obra mountain bike championship Olympic distance or XCO race on Sunday. So they were both really, quote, well attended. There was quite a few people there. I think short track had like 175 participants.
That's good.
And the XCO race had about 200.
Oh, wow. More people coming out.
Yeah. Yep, more people came out for the longer race. So it was up at the Washougal Motocross track. Scott Schultz did a fantastic job. Organizing the race and setting it up, it all went off really quite well. It was just so friggin' hot, and that's been a running theme here that we've said today. But
it's just that time of year. It's generally hot this time of year, so it's, I don't know, how do you change that? Just have that earlier in the year? Or?
I don't know. You know, they changed the rules a little bit. They let people spray us down while we were racing and get, you know, We could take hand-ups from the, because Obra normally doesn't allow you, quote-unquote, to take hand-ups during races, but they let us do that so that
needed to be pouring you with water, actually.
Well, yeah, there was guys with, like, super soakers that were just, like, squirting you as you went by if you, like, nodded your head.
Was it pretty dusty out there?
It wasn't too bad because the guy who owns the property pulled out the water truck in the morning.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And he sprayed down the whole parking lot. And they had four or five sprinklers on the course as well so that it kept the dust down. The dust was much better than the week before.
Gotcha.
Because they learned from the week before.
It was I was going to say, because it was pretty dusty. And if it was dusty and they were hitting you with a super soaker, so I could see you just being a big muddy, glommed up mess of like dirt. And
but it wasn't funny. Too bad. It made some corners slick that you weren't expecting.
Really?
Yeah, because they had sprinklers out, you know, in between races. Sure. But, you know, that's part of racing. So it was good. Short track was great. I raced the 50 to 54 group. And I squoze onto the podium somehow. I took third place, so almost my best race result of the year so far, because I'm still battling back from the hole, and I'm starting to feel a little bit better. So
I was gonna put a really, really sappy comment on your post there and be like, Lance, you're still my hero, and you still ride a bike. No matter how quote unquote puffy you think you are, you ride a bike.
I am still puffy at the
you
moment.
You ride a bike very fast still. I don't care about anything else you say negative about yourself. You ride a bicycle fast.
Short track was a ton of fun. We had a bunch of teammates out there. We had 20 people or something like that from the team that was out there competing.
Oh, it's a huge crew.
We had several that won the state championships. Sonia Ebert won in the Athena division. Kurt Kritschko won the 60s.
I think you guys are making some people pretty interested in it, too. I know David said next year he wants to do some short track.
They're fun.
Some of the girls on the team. I want some of the young.
There's still one more short track race out at PIR this week. Or not this week, but next week.
Next Tuesday, the 8th.
That'd be a good one for him to come to.
I think I want Austin Wick to jump into that, too. I think Austin Wick would be a great little short track rider. Yeah. He got into PIR on the road this year. Next year I was like, hey, I want you to also do.
Yeah.
I think it'd be cool for him to do both. I think we'll have a lot, like even more people interested next year.
Good.
Yeah, so lots of teammates made podiums.
What about little Whitney Hayden? Did she race either?
She did, yeah. There's nobody can touch her.
So she's the state champion for both as well?
Yes, correct.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so she kind of crushed it out there. So that was a lot of fun.
Were they able to get her little brother out there who's a little ripper too?
No.
Still too young?
Yep.
Couldn't fudge the age?
Nope. Ripley lets him fudge the age, and Oprah does not.
Yeah, so he'll be out there next year.
Yeah,
I think this year he can race cyclocross because of the way that the age group. He'll
works
be the
age.
Youngest kid out there, but he'll still handle his business because last year they fudged a little bit.
Yeah,
and he still third.
Crushed it.
Yeah. Anyway,
so very fun. I think the elite race and short track was won by Henry Nadel, who is. He's living in Bend right now, but he's won a bunch of, not World Cup races, but a lot of, he's been on the podium in some of the...
US Cup races?
Really? Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so very good. Landon Farsworth was second, and Andrew Loaiza was third for short track the pros. The women was won by Emma Mirinen. I'm going to butcher that. She beat Erica Westcott and Sophie Russenberger. Hmm. So it brought in a lot of people. It was a ton of fun. It was a party atmosphere. Yeah. There was music cranking.
Is it kind of a cyclocross feel to it?
It did have a cyclocross feel to it.
Yeah.
Because you could see the whole course from,
that's so cool.
You know, so it's not like an XCO race where you see him go through the finish line and that's it.
It looked too like there was a kind of like pretty fun little rocky section too.
There was a little rock garden that had a couple of lines through it. And or you could take a beeline that skipped the rock section if you didn't want to risk it.
My line. Yep.
So we had a good time. It was a lot of fun.
Cool.
So I'm super proud of my teammates and a lot of people who came out and I finally beat some teammates who've been smoking me all year.
That's good,
and
man.
So now they hate me again. But not Terry Hamness. He had my number all weekend.
He's loving that right now.
I know Terry's listening to this. He's like, you better mention I beat your ass.
You beat me fairly. Sunday was the cross country championship. So a lot more difficult course. It was a 3.5 mile course that had roughly 700 feet of elevation per lap. In just 3 miles or 3.5 miles. It started with like a 2.5 or 3 minute climb, very steep.
Yeah.
I was trying to go through my Strava to see how steep it got. It said like 35% in sections, but I think it was sustained over 20% several sections. Not very long because it was only 3 minutes or so, enough that it sprung out the fields right away. So
yeah.
Were there people passing on that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. I got past lots on that.
That was the passing section, I would imagine.
The passing section. There were several other areas where there was wide enough to pass, and lots of the course was actually great, much better than I expected for a new course, you know, because it some of the sections were like just cut in, and over some old like motocross cross country tracks. Mm-hmm. But yeah, tight corners and rock gardens and some and tricky bridges and log, you know, hopovers and tight corners with like steep punchy climbs that if you weren't in the right gear, you were off and running up it. I was right on Chris Surratt's wheel for a while and he dabbed midway up a climb and I screamed at him. So that was kind of because somebody dabs in front of you, you're done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If they're in your way, that yeah. you're off the bike running too.
So how did that course compare to some of the other local mountain bike races that you've done? Like maybe some of your favorites, was it up there as one of the better ones?
It was. Or? Yeah. Okay. You know, it was great that it was, you know, only 30 minutes from Portland or 40 minutes from Portland. So that was kind of nice. Mudslinger is a great course, but it's usually wet and muddy, which is why it's called Mudslinger.
Yeah.
The races in Bend are also the Bend trails are fantastic. Yeah. So those are really good too. But those are older, more established trails, except for the ones on Mudslinger. So it was a ton of fun. It was a lot more fun, a lot more party atmosphere than I expected it to be. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, you know, and enough people showed up. I think they made it work right. You know, the best part was Washougal has a world class motocross
oh, yeah.
park.
Yeah.
So Washougal MX, there's a World Cup event that comes here every year. I think it was just the week before.
It was the previous weekend.
The previous weekend.
Yeah.
Where people come from all over the world to race motocross. So all the pros, all the motocross pros, they come. Everybody knows Washougal. They all know about it. You know, it's kind of through the trees and whatnot. Our mountain bike course finished going down the motocross track. So we got to ride like, you know, 3/4 of a mile on the motocross track through the whoop section.
That's awesome.
Over a couple jumps.
That's cool.
Some tight corners. So that was a blast.
Yeah.
They got some good photographs of people like ripping through, you know, the motocross track on your mountain bikes. So it was really cool. They let us do that. And we were able to do the race on a day where there wasn't like motocross practice because they have events up there all year long. And it was great. But the owner of the property up there has just been fantastic in wanting to bring more bikes and more biking events to the venue. So
he seems like a pretty cool guy. He's approached us before and, hey, do you guys race cyclocross out here? And he's just like, couldn't be more supportive of the cycling community and just wanting to engage with cyclists. So kudos to him.
Yeah. So super fun, super great venue. Lots of people showed up. The party atmosphere, which, you know, more of a party atmosphere than you get in road races, you know, because the community is just a little different off-road than it is in road races. And now, so
they invited you to come out and basically camp the whole weekend, right? You
could
see on Friday night and Saturday night.
Correct.
And had areas designated for that.
They did. Like when we had all our team tents set up and lots of teams had team tents set up and there was, you know, 30 or 40 or 50 vehicles that were camping, which was great too. Mm-hmm. So
good.
They had bathrooms for us and there were hoses to wash yourself down. It was well run, well done.
Good job.
Good stuff.
Scott.
Yes.
Good job, company.
Scott. So the XCO race, we again had some teammates that won. Kurt Kritschko again won the 60-year-old. I raced with Kurt, started like 3 seconds behind me, and we raced together the whole first lap, but then he dropped me because he's a little guy and he can fly uphill, which I cannot. And then Chris Surratt won the Clydesdales for the XCO.
Yep.
Chris also raced the Clydesdale for the short track race, and his race was, I think, about 4 seconds long. They blew the whistle. He jumped on his bike to go and immediately blew his chain.
Snapped his
chain.
Ooh, wow. I'm glad it happened there and not in a more dangerous part of the course then.
He was not happy, so he snapped his chain. Actually, Paul broke his chain too.
Did he really?
Yeah, the morning, doing the pre-lap ride, he snapped his chain on a section. So
interesting.
Luckily, I had like enough stuff that everybody got their bikes back up and running. So
nice.
There's a lot of people right now riding pretty worn out chains because they are hard to come by.
They are.
It's true.
So, yeah.
It's true.
That's like, Surratt didn't think, he's like, I don't know where I'm going to find a chain. I'm like, go look in the bucket. I got a bucket of bike parts in the back of my van. He's like, oh, you got a chain right here. And I'm like, all right, it's yours. Take it.
That's awesome.
So it all worked out good. So yeah, tons of fun, very hard racing, lots of sweatiness and just good times. It was fun to be out there. Lots of people are out there. So
which course did you like better?
You know, they're both very good. The cross country course was much, I was dreading it because of how steep the climb was mm-hmm. on the beginning. And I knew that that would kind of put me on my back foot immediately, but there was enough technical stuff in the woods that
make up for it. Yep.
I could make up for it. I ended up fourth in my age group in the XCO course. So a couple guys that didn't race short track showed up for the XCO course, and I couldn't quite hang with them. Plus, Terry beat me again. So go Terry Hamness. So it was a ton of fun. So
sounds exciting.
But that's enough. I raced my bike a couple of times. I didn't embarrass myself this week. So
sweet.
Yeah.
Cool.
Champ here. I'm all about having fun. You know, get a couple of cocktails in me.
You drinking cocktails now, champ?
I'm drinking Element Tea at the moment. So whatever the crap.
Champ Bailey in the hizzy to talk a little bit about some racing stuff that has been going on in the world of cycling.
Well, there was one huge race that went on this last week, and I don't know if we just jump right into that because what else happened? Before I talk about the Tour de France Femmes avec Zwift,
don't forget that Zwift.
Yes,
yep. Mm-hmm.
That race wouldn't have happened without Zwift.
Zwift.
Yes,
we're super happy for that.
Yeah, I was gonna say people can hate Zwift as much as they want, but as long as it keeps on throwing money at pro cycling, I think we all should be fine with it.
So. Yes, but there was a World Cup mountain bike race in Snowshoe, Vermont. Christopher Blevins actually won the short track on Thursday, which is fantastic. So did Sevilla Blanc, the other American who's from Durango. They kind of crushed it.
It's a good mountain biking town.
Yes. And then on the XCO course on Sunday, Christopher Blevins actually flatted during the race, but still managed to pull himself back to fourth, which is kind of amazing that he pulled himself back to fourth. And Sevilla Blanc also did very well there too. So the Americans were doing great at the World Cup races, mountain biking this year. I don't know.
Brought to you by Zwift.
Brought to you. But the big race that happened this last week was the Tour de France Femmes avec Zwift.
Zwift.
Yes. Zwift. And it was, I don't know, did you guys watch much of it? It wasn't on regular TV. It was broadcast on Peacock.
Yep.
Yeah, which is actually quite cheap.
$6 a month.
$6
that a month. That is the best deal in town.
Too. It's great.
I used to pay over $50, I think it was, just to watch the tour. And they give you some other stuff that you're never going to really watch.
Yeah.
And I'm like, ugh. And then you could watch the whole Tour de France now on Peacock for, if you want to sign up for the month, $6.
Yeah. Yes. That's a great deal.
So
it really is.
Yeah.
Yep.
So they had 8 stages in the Tour de France Femmes, which.
Zwift.
Avec Zwift.
Avec Zwift.
What does Avec mean? With Zwift,
put Zwift.
Brought to you by
Zwift.
Brought to you by. I have no idea.
I don't speak French clearly, and I'm also saying it wrong.
Tour de France of the Zwift. I don't know.
But it was actually quite exciting racing. The coverage on Peacock was fantastic. They had all the same like motorbikes and helicopters and static cameras. They had a couple of announcers who were
terrible.
They were bad.
Moderately adequate. I don't know.
Why are we talking about this before? It's like, as the announcers, what makes a cycling announcer great? Because it's a long. I mean, like, to sit there and talk the entire time during a bike race is tough. You got to study the backstories. We want to hear backstories, or I want to hear random facts about the castles they're passing and stuff, which I actually think is great. But
they
did some of that. They did do a little bit of that. They just don't have
personalities. They know their stuff. I mean, they know all the things and all the people, but they not good at the storytelling, not good with the emotion, not good.
Some of these athletes, because I mean, I guess they were talking about this a little bit. So, I'm going to butcher pronunciation. Van Vleuten, who won, correct?
Yeah. Yes, Annemiek van Vleuten.
Annemiek van Vleuten. We're like the move here. We're going to see how bad we can butcher every single European name here after destroying Vingegaard's name forever. But like, she's an amazingly interesting story in her training style that really wasn't like brought up until like. It's brought up at the very. I'm glad they brought it up, but like, it's like, God, you could have built up this character because it was no mystery that she going into this race was going to be really, really good.
Yeah,
especially the way it was sorted out. You're not really hearing anything about her until like the end.
So I can remember way back when, this is probably maybe a decade ago, sitting down to watch the tour with my wife, and this is back when I was busy working in the morning, so I would record it and I would come home and watch it at night after like. Threatening people's lives to not ruin the race for me.
Yeah.
And I would want to watch it in the evening time. And my wife would sit down. She's like, oh, you're going to watch this again. She's like, can't we watch something else? I'm like, no. just give it a moment. Just try. And she sat down and she slowly but surely came around. She started to get invested. She was.
Is that Wiggo's here? Did Wiggo win that?
It was probably around the Wiggo era.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was back when the SkyTrain was ruined. But, you've got, Phil Liggett and who was the gentleman who passed away? Steve.
Oh my gosh.
Not Steve Perino. Anyway. But you know what I'm talking about.
Yes,
so
yes, exactly
they were just good storytellers and they were captivating, engaging, and she's seeing all the countryside and they're talking about the different things. They're talking about all the human element. And then all of a sudden she starts to become invested in the actual race as well as the riders, as well as the scenery. And it came to me coming home and like putting it on. She's like, oh, okay, we're going to watch that now. Okay. She was
into Sherwin.
Paul Sherwin. That's
Thank
what
you.
It
Paul
is.
Paul Sherwin.
Thank you for, so that made it captivating. Now, let's just go ahead and jump into the whole topic. Sorry there, champ. We're going to just take over.
Dang it.
We're going to talk about the results of the race as we go through this.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. We want to know how we get more growth in this women's sport. How do we help promote and get more eyeballs on the Tour de France, Femmes, Zwift. On the Zwift. And a lot of it's going to start with the little things. And that's part of it. Like if you were to sit down with Cassie or you were to sit down with Brandy or if I were to sit down with Rebecca and say, let's watch this. Like, sure, they're going to have that natural, like, okay, we get it because you guys ride and we ride a little bit ourselves and Cassie rides a lot.
Yeah.
They're going to sit down, but then they're going to be like, oh, this just isn't exciting to me. That's not captivating me. So that's kind of problem number one that I see with this.
Yep.
If we want to see this propelled forward, these women want to have more stages. They want to have time trials. They want to have the ability to go up Alpe d'Huez.
Yeah.
Alpe d'Huez.
I was trying to put that in there. Thank you. Alpe d'Huez.
Alpe d'Huez.
So the net of it is like, we want to see that happen, but all right, let's start with like, let's put a good product out there. Let's put a better product. And I think that they kind of like,
it was
almost at a home run. They had a very solid double or
a
triple.
A good start.
If they want the home run, get some better announcers out there.
The racing was very exciting all week. It wasn't like they were boring or it was like, man, this is slow.
Yeah.
Like, so that was great.
There was attacking. There was moments of drama. There were crashes. It was all that stuff that makes 3 weeks of the tour seem exciting.
Yes.
It was shoved into 8 days, which I liked that they started with 1 week purely for also... I'm sure if you ask some of these women, they're like, I mean, I'm sure a lot of them were like, no, I'm fine with like 8 stages. I mean, I even think some of the Grand Tours need to consider, I think the Giro and the Vuelta need to consider going down to 2 weeks because I think it would make more exciting racing. And in all honesty, I think it would.
You'd probably see more people do all of them or more of them because, I mean, one of those takes it out of you.
Three weeks is a lot.
You're not going to break that tradition of 3 weeks.
I know. But and this is another point we were talking off the air that we're going to bring up is there's a history with cycling that you got to consider too and how long it takes something like this to take hold. We do live in the world of immediate gratification. So this is very good to see. They did 8 stages. It went well. The coverage, the base looks good.
Correct.
It looks good. The house looks terrible, in my opinion, in the sense that the announcers were bad. The coverage, didn't cover the racing well enough, in my opinion. There was cringeworthy coverage with stuff where it's like, what was the whole conversation where they're like, oh, how do they pee on the bike? That was like actually brought up by the announcers. I'm like,
do we have to really talk about
what
that?
I was like, what are you doing? It was just, the base was great. Luckily, when the base is good, you can work on all the other things. Yeah. Like everything else can grow. There's really engaging personalities they need to, because the question is, how do we get, you know, the three women that we're closest to in our lives interested in something like this is, you make the characters engaging.
Yeah.
Why did America fall in love with the Tour de France? It's not because of Greg LeMond. Greg LeMond sucks. It was because of Lance Armstrong.
Because of his story.
Armstrong. Lance Armstrong. If you took a stat, if you asked
but
anybody
it wasn't, it
during
was,
the Greg LeMond
era. It was because
era.
Of him overcoming cancer and then winning. It was that
because
story.
Because that story, which he did. I mean, regardless of all the other things that happened.
Cheater.
He is the most engaging person cycling's ever had. If Lance Armstrong did not exist, let's be completely honest with ourselves, and you asked any American, can you name one professional bike rider? Do you think they would be able to?
It would be difficult.
It'd be an ask. They don't know Greg LeMond. Nobody
it would
knows
be in the same breath, though, once he kind of fell from his little, you know, perch at the top there.
Died
bright. People hated cyclists because of him.
They did.
And I've had things thrown at me on the road and being called Lance.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. I mean, no, there was definitely that of it. But I'm saying he in his bright light was an engaging personality.
Yeah.
There's somebody I'm sure like that in the women's field. There is. There might not be a Lance Armstrong. Hopefully there's not. But there's engaging personalities. They need to find a way. How do we market the personalities?
Oh, yeah.
Not always the race itself. I think maybe we get too focused on like, oh, how do we like make the Tour de Femme popular? It's like, no, how do you make Mariana Voss somebody people care about?
If you
think about Simone Biles.
Yeah.
Like how many people actually care about gymnastics? Like, you know, I mean, but you know, you watch because of Simone Biles.
Every single woman in that tour, I'm sure, has a story behind her. Yeah. Now, if left to their own devices, maybe they're not going to be the best storyteller, but if you get the right person, we don't need to turn this into a reality TV series, you could definitely take that component, that, you know, that format, if you will, of like a reality program and apply that to the women's race and start to have somebody that like puts together the stories or a good editor or, you know, a storyteller that can start to evoke that. And maybe it doesn't necessarily have to be the person giving you the words, but the person to tell the story.
That's
about
how you
that
create
person.
Rivalries. Yes. I mean, you create rivalries when you, you know, and it's not that you want to, I agree. It's not like you want to turn this into TMZ where it's like,
no,
you know, you want people hating each other, but no, you want to find those backstories. And that's what,
Every one of them have overcome something to get to where they're
exactly,
at.
Exactly.
Tell the stories.
Let's take, you know, Annemiek van Vleuten for one. You know, she's 39 years old.
Yep.
She has a master's degree in epidemiology in animal studies.
Yeah.
So she started, sorry, I'm playing with the mic.
AGD over here.
And she has had this whole other career because there weren't enough opportunities in women's cycling to support her. That's not the case. That hasn't been the case for the last like 4 years or 5 years, something like that for her, because she's been able to make a living as a woman's professional cyclist.
Also, how cool is that she's the one to win the first Tour de Femme too? I mean, you look at somebody who's had to grind their entire professional career, a la Zwift, you know, brought to you by Zwift. But she's had to grind her entire career and to see, I'm not going to say this is towards the end of her career, because who knows, she could be racing until she's 45, 46. She looked very young and spry out there. She did not look like she was 39 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, she destroyed the field on stage eight. Or stage, whichever stage it was. But she...
Seven and eight,
yeah. I mean, like, really to see... And how old's Mariana Voss?
She's 35.
Yeah, so we're talking two people in the... I mean, I'm not going to say the...
Choose your words wisely there,
I'm not going to say later part of their career because... but they're not... It's not like we're looking...
You're
not spring chickens, yeah.
It's not like we're looking at the next 10 years of professional women's cycling.
They're not wearing white jerseys. Yeah.
We're looking at that era of professional women's cycling that probably the public eye missed, which was these two.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully they now get to shine the light on the younger generation coming up. And I think that would be an awesome way for these two to quote unquote end their careers. But for Van Vleuten to win the first Tour de France is awesome.
Well, the tour didn't happen without Mariana Voss. She was like the driving force to going to the company that puts on the Tour de France to get it to
get their
again.
Sponsor, which was
ASO
Swift. Yeah, she was the driving force to get it to happen. I mean, Voss is a legend. Marianne Voss.
She should
just
go straight into whatever the head quote unquote UCI of FEMS is. Just give it to Voss and at this point, or have her involved because that's amazing.
She's won everything: cyclocross, road races, time trials. She, her nickname is the Cannibal.
I love that.
Voss is boss. She is, you know, amazing. Very cool for her that she was able to wear the yellow jersey for a couple of days. She actually
five stages.
I think four. I don't think she had it. She didn't have it the first day.
She kept it through the gravel stage. She did well through the gravel stage. Which was another cool thing. I know that there were a lot of people talking like, oh, the amount of flats and crashes like ruined it. I'm like, no, they needed something that was original and cool. And
that made it cool.
That made it very cool. It was interesting.
It made it interesting. I wanted to tune in to watch the gravel
stage. I know it sounds terrible, but like the amount of crashes and then also the exhausted Spanish woman. What was her name? The one who got hit by her own car.
Oh, that was brutal.
I know. Yeah. But I mean, like that's as brutal and awful as that is. It was an intense stage and that made a storyline out of it. I think more people probably knew that somebody got hit by a car in that race. Then
one of the things that made it worse is they have different team sizes for the women's, the, you know, ASO. Only allowed, like, there was only one team car instead of like the men's had two team cars. So you could have one team car with the brake and one behind the peloton. No, with the women's race with only one team car, if you had a rider in the brake, the team car was with the brake. That means everybody back in the other team.
Why would they do that? Why? What is the rationale behind that? I mean, if the team has the car and they've got the support staff to do that, why?
Yeah, like why is Jumbo Visma not have two cars out there? No, you know this is.
And is it because some of the lesser teams only have one car and then it's going to be
that? That could actually be more it. The women only need one. No, it could be more.
Did they have neutral support then to get water and nutrition up to some of these?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they did.
That's probably my best guess as
what was the size of the field again? Was it 100?
I don't know.
Because the men's is 175, I think.
Somewhere in there.
I think it's like 175-ish. I think I was trying to do the math on the number. I think it's around 100 for the women's. It was a noticeably smaller looking peloton. And then also through the stages, the way those stages were designed too, it really split the peloton apart really well, actually. I mean, it made the racing exciting in that way. And also I think here's the really cool part about the Tour de Femmes is the women's professional peloton has
144.
Oh, okay. So
that's
so bigger.
Not terrible. It could be bigger. Like let's get some more women in there.
Yeah. Exactly. It's I think with this the truncated down version in this first one I think is good because it limited the amount of big mistakes that could happen.
Yeah.
If you do 8 stages well, that's great. But if you go 21 and something terrible happens, like I mean, you know, just like there's any list of terrible things can happen during the Tour de France. So there's tons. You limit your chance for something really bad to happen, and then you grow it from there. I'd be really interested to hear like how Voss thought it went. You know, somebody who really is an architect of this. Like what was her final assessment? Did she like her final product? Did she feel like this is something that can grow?
I think the general consensus was everybody enjoyed it.
I think there were
certain exceptions, we've already brought up. I think that it was well received. And I think that they're going to continue to grow on that.
Yep.
And thank you to Zwift for throwing a bunch of financial support behind that. Let's see some more entities step up to the plate and do the same thing.
There were crowds on the courses.
Yes.
There were people watching on the television coverage. So
tell the stories. Make these people be world-renowned.
Make them characters. Yeah,
make them
characters.
Make them known. Yep. Like, let's get to know who they are, not just a machine or a woman sitting on a bicycle going fast.
Or
I mean,
a wattage or anything like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so from this tour, what's the story? What's the story you remember from this tour?
Van Vleuten climbing is what I'm remembering. Like that's more to me is how she's head and shoulders above the field and as a climber.
It's deeper than that. Stage 1 and 2 and 3, she was terrible because was sick.
Yes, I do remember this part.
She almost quit.
She almost quit, and there were times where her teammates were pushing her because she was so off her game.
Wow. Yeah.
And she had lost several minutes in the first few stages, which were flat sprint stages, which she should lose nothing on. So
she had a couple mechanicals during the gravel stage too, didn't she? Because she was way back in the field. Like, I'll be completely honest, I only knew the main players from the first couple days. I had forgotten that Van Fleet, like I knew of Van Fleet. I completely forgot Van Fleet was even in this race, to be completely honest.
So Marianne Vos, she had the yellow jersey through six stages.
I thought Vos was just going to walk away with it.
She had she only had like a 30-second lead at that point because it'd been mostly flat stages. There were the two last stages, stage 7 and 8, were both mountain stages, which were extremely difficult. So,
which knowing the end result, I'm sure Vos went into those stages knowing she's like, well, I'm giving up the yellow jersey.
Right.
We didn't know that, but I think that she knew at that
point. We didn't know that.
She knows her competition better than anybody else. She knows she's not there with them.
And I mean, Van Vleuten, she beat Marianne Vos by over 20 minutes on the first mountain stage.
We kept on fast forwarding through 7 stages. We just kept on seeing the gap grow. And I was like, because in my head, I was like, oh, Vos is going to, they're going to work together and bring this gap back. I was like, no, they're not. Oh my gosh, this gap
she threw out the parachute. Well,
and Van Vleuten went on the first climb on stage 7, which meant that's how confident she was in her ability at that point. She's like, not only am I going to get a lot of timer, I'm not going to wait. I'm going to go right now and show that I am clearly the best climber in this field. Like,
yes.
And who was trying to stay with her, who was just getting shattered on everything.
What was her name?
She hung on well, though, because my God, that was a brave move on her part.
Yeah, pretty amazing.
So,
yeah.
A quick question here. Like, if you just take... Like, you don't want to see the misogynistic guy out there that's saying, oh, they're women, they're not that fast. So I can but like, I'd love
to address these comments, though, because that's the backstory with this is the Tour de Femmes has to fight dudes that think that they could race this.
I would love to say,
throw some numbers at people here.
Just go take this. Yeah. He doesn't have to be one of these guys, but just take some guy and say, all right, you have to keep up with them.
Yeah.
Just some me or you or Lance or anybody. Yeah. Like, I mean,
okay, case in point. Laura Mullen, our own teammate, female, she came on the gravel ride this week and
blew
kicked
people apart.
My ass. Oh, no, sure. Yeah. Not people, me.
I wish I could give you specific examples in Telluride. There were too many. There were many, many, many women who came by me and made me look like I was not riding a bicycle.
So I'd like to see some decently established good guy. Put him in there and just say, all right, keep up and just see him get sped off the back.
Well, here's the bottom line. As an obsessive climber myself, knowing Van Vleuten's stat, she would drop me on those climbs.
Yeah.
She was climbing each one of those climbs at about 5 to 5.2.
Watts per kilogram.
Let me do some math for the macho guys here. That means that she would need to weigh, let's say she's my weight. She's not. She's much lighter than me. That means that I'd be putting out about 360 on each of those climbs. Yeah. Now, we're talking about almost 100, what was that, like an 85-mile stage or something like that? I mean, she's doing that on each climb, each climb there. That was her, that's her repeatability effort.
Yeah.
After racing bikes long enough and now time trialing a ton, I know a couple guys who could do that, a couple. And I mean, it's a small group of guys.
I know. I wish all men and women would do this, but I would love nothing more because power is becoming such a commonplace in cycling. Everybody knows your power numbers. Everybody knows how many watts you're putting out, how many watts you put out in the sprint, what you're holding, what your watts. If they had that put up on the screen for everybody to watch, and I'm watching the women going,
a lot more respect.
Holy cow.
Yep.
These women are beasts.
Oh, they're flying.
And they would kill me. All the respect. I think that would earn them so much more respect. Yes. Yeah.
And you know what would be cool? I think Zwift should do a, just because of the negative, there's lots of positives that happened with the Tour de Femmes, but the negativity was predictable. It's the guys sitting in the chair, the same ones who would talk down the women's national soccer team. It's that group of guys, just translate them into the cycling world. If those guys had to hop on Zwift and do a race where Van Vleuten is some character, whatever, let's see how many actual guys who quote unquote say that what their actual watts per kilo is, if they could actually hang. And I'm sure 99.99999% of them could not.
Yeah.
And it's a bummer that we have to, because so we, I think we can segue into this now. When we're talking about what was the holdup with cycling as a sport versus we were using the examples of track and field, triathlon. Triathlon's always my favorite example because being a young sport, triathlon has been very, and I think I'm integrated enough in the sport to know this. It's got to be one of the most evenly
viewed
sports.
Just as much interest in the women as there are in the men. And that's fantastic.
I can't think of a sport that's that even. I think something like tennis is close.
I would say tennis might
tennis
even.
Tennis is good.
Yeah.
Tennis is good.
The United and field State, is excellent.
Track and field is very close.
The United States.
Very close.
U.S. Women's National Soccer Team.
Gymnastics is right there, I think.
Yeah. U.S. Women's National Soccer Team in the United States is far more popular than the men.
It is. The yes. only problem is with soccer is there's still that issue with there's unfair parity. And then really when you look at other countries is where it gets bad. That's where it gets pretty bad.
But still, I mean, it's something to look at. It's a case study that you can take a look at and say, all right, well, why?
Especially when you're looking at a sport like cycling where it's been, you know, people need to understand cycling is well over a 100-year-old professional sport.
Yeah.
It has been around a long time. I was reading a very good article that went into the history of why a sport like tennis has more attention on the professional women field too, is because there was a time period where, first class women were starting to get into sports and they were breaking down that stigma of like, no, I want to go and do the sport. I can do the sport just as good as any man. So they broke down that wall in a first class sport. Understand at that time, especially in a country like Europe, this is really, we're talking pre-America. This is when it was still a very European centric sport. It still is, in my opinion, cycling, but this is when it was an entirely European centric sport. Cycling was the poor guy's sport.
Yeah. There's definitely a socioeconomic play thing here. Cause you know, the tennis stuff too, like they're going to get into that. They're going to want to start doing that. And then all of a sudden they're going to make it happen for their children too. Yes. And that's the key.
It is.
Because as soon as you can get your kids involved with it.
And it's, do you have the time and luxury to do these sports? So think of first class women. Yes, they had the time and luxury to do tennis.
Yep.
The second, third class women did not have the time and luxury in their lives to do cycling. They were at home taking care of tons of children and a million other responsibilities. Yep. So the sport was very delayed in growing for women because it wasn't a sport that first class women were like, oh, I'm going to go race bikes. That was just not a thing in Europe at that time. So when you're looking at the history of it, this is why I think professional cycling for women is dragging so far behind track and field, triathlon, tennis, soccer, basketball is a whole other story. I'm not even going to open up the basketball Pandora's box because that's a whole other story. But it's I think really looking at track and field, tennis, and triathlon are really good examples. I'll say swimming too. Swimming in there definitely too.
Yep. Sure.
Because swimming also very first class sport requires access to a pool.
Yeah.
That's the thing with swimming. Whenever I had a friend ask me this too, with like, why does Africa not have more professional swimmers? I was like, because a lot of those countries don't have easy access to pools. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about what countries do well at swimming. It's like skiing. Yeah. you gotta have access to a ski slope to be good at skiing. Right. You know, you gotta have access to a pool to be good at swimming.
Yeah.
So it's, how do we continue to make women's cycling very accessible? It looks like it does at the local level with a team like you've built, Jake. It's a team that if I had a daughter, I'd feel very comfortable with her coming in and doing youth cycling in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
It would not be a problem. But the thing is, how do we create that environment in small town Ohio, you know, where I'm from, or like small town Indiana, or where Matt's from, Alabama? Like how do you make those places more accepting of...
I think there are a lot of cells out there, a lot of little groups.
Yeah.
And I think that they just... It's so hard. I mean, there's so many things holding them back. And if it were something where they were challenged... And there was all of a sudden like more interest from the community. Like, hey, you guys have a cycling team. Do you work with kids? Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, they're like, well, maybe we should. Or maybe there's some sort of incentive that we need to put out there. And I've always said that cycling has a place. And it's something that you can do for the rest of your life until you're in your 70s, your 80s, and even in your 90s. So you should be adopting that. And like, you don't necessarily have to race, but we would love it if you would.
Yeah.
In order to make that happen, it has to be up there with all of your staple sports. It's got to be mentioned in the same breath with baseball, football, basketball, soccer, and so on.
Yeah.
And until we get to that point, we're just not going to get there. We're starting to get more traction. We're getting more kids interested in it. And I think triathlon is probably doing a better job of leading the way of bringing more youth into the sport because it all of a sudden is something that kids can go to college and they can participate on a team and they can get scholarships.
True. That was definitely helpful, especially when you're talking those little cells
that's
now
huge.
Gaining more
you know, how many kids have you personally come into contact with who are phenomenal swimmers that are doing fantastically in the pool, but get burned out before they get to the end of their high school career. And all of a sudden they want to go try something different. Cycling and running and swimming. They still can have that swimming thing that they like.
Yeah.
Oh, let's do triathlon. And they turn out to be fantastic because they're probably lights out like eons further ahead than your typical triathlete because they've got that swimming background. And you know, you just have to develop the engine for running and then, the cycling stuff, they do fantastic.
They do. And I mean, even the exact opposite side from the runners who get burned out or injured and run. Yeah. Really, it's more often injuries and running. And then they're going that same way. And it's funny that cycling's always that in-between point. And strangely enough, it becomes the sport sometimes those kids actually end up loving the most.
Yeah.
So it's just how do you build then that group of kids that come up from cycling? And there's, you know, I mean, I do think America, this is like, man, we've had this conversation in soccer for generations now in America. It's like, how do you make American soccer like European soccer? And one of my favorite answers, or South That's American
cultural.
Soccer.
It's cultural.
It's cultural. And the reason, so it's, there was one of the best examples was, I had a buddy, so Bob Duncan, who I've talked about on the show all the time, used to always say, he's like, triathlon and cycling are never going to be as big in this country as they are in some other countries because poor kids don't do it. And Bob comes from poor. Bob was an original Ironman. He was like a dude who literally rode a steel bike and jean shorts in his original races. Marine, real low socioeconomic Midwest guy who came up and built a lot of steps for other kids from those lower middle class areas to get there. But he talked about basketball specifically.
Well, if you think about it, basketball.
Yeah.
All you need is a hoop and a ball.
Hoop and a ball.
Baseball, and there's plenty of people out there playing with a stick and a...
What's in every inner city or super rural area? Yeah. A baseball diamond somewhere. What's in every rural or inner city area? A basketball court.
Yeah, and soccer is probably the easiest of them all. You need just something that rolls on the ground and you can put two pieces of paper on the ground for a goal and like all of a sudden you got a soccer field and the kids go out there and you can entertain them for hours doing that.
And this is the cultural part. Yeah. So what builds the culture? It's what the masses do. And what socioeconomically, you speak in percentages... Most people are poor. So if you are finding these kids that find passion sports, they have access to. Sure. And here's cycling's big problem. And this is why I'm more calling you, people like Jake can do as much as possible on a local level to make this possible. And you're doing everything somebody in your position could possibly do.
We
can always do
more, but we do. We try and do a lot.
Reasonably, you're doing above and beyond what most cells are doing in the country. What I'm calling out is the power and the money in cycling. Oh, yeah. Needs to make a commitment to this and not a fake commitment. This isn't the, we're going to give out, these little scholarships here and there. It's like that bike's still $4,000.
Yeah.
That travel to go to that race that you just planned is still $4,000. Yeah. You're not giving out stipends to that.
Yeah.
What kid whose parents are making $30,000 a year can travel to Arkansas to race nationals? It doesn't happen.
There was something interesting that happened this past weekend that made me kind of go, maybe you can capture this person's attention because they have the stage, they have the money.
Yeah.
And now they're invested. LeBron James just invested $30 million in Canyon bicycles. I'm like, that is actually a big win.
Speaking
like,
about I'm a not, guy who has I mean, built ladders up for kids from low socioeconomic.
Yes, and he's always
town he's from even.
He's always supported cycling, and I think that this is a good thing. Even though
Reggie
I'm like,
Miller's another one who has done a lot of charitable. Yeah. I mean, you look at it's funny that it has to be in America. It's like. Basketball. It's like how do you make the sport more popular? You get basketball players to watch it. There you go. It's
but I'm not a Canyon guy. I mean, I think they make a fine bike. I don't necessarily like the direct to consumer business model because it's not good for bike shops. And I don't know if it's ultimately good for cycling per se, because you kind of start to lose that local bike shop.
Touch. Yeah.
And that's where you like disseminate information. That's where you come together and you share stories. That's where you build community. And you don't get that from a direct to consumer bicycle thing like Canyon. But in the same breath, the fact that LeBron freaking James, sorry, Lance,
that's my nickname.
is stepping up and throwing $30 million at that and has been all along saying that he's a big advocate for cycling and wanting to get more kids involved.
The man commuted his bike to basketball practice every day when he was in Cleveland. Yeah. Maybe, that was his thing. Yeah.
And maybe there is something there that's going to come out of this that could be a springboard for everybody else to kind of jump on. And maybe somehow, if he wants to get more kids involved in cycling and he's going to throw millions and millions of dollars at a cycling company, there's got to be some sort of way to leverage that.
Yeah. And this is, I think this is even when we go back to a group like Legion, when we're talking about a group that's trying to tap into a group of people that have not historically been in cycling. You know, you're talking about your inner city kids. Something like Legion was big. And this is why I know when that was brought up, I was so hoping that this fight that they had blows over as just a one day bad thing. I really hope that we don't continue this bad. This is the dark side of, I hate using this term, but I'm going to use it, is the bad cancel culture. When somebody who is doing something positive for the world has a bad day and we decide we're going to burn them at the stake because of it. I really don't like, does there need to be an apology, a suspension? Yes. But like, when we're talking about, if we're talking about women, we're talking about, and I'll get, racial here, Black and Hispanic communities in poor areas. Kids who grow up probably driven towards like basketball and football, don't want to play basketball and football. Yeah. All those groups that cycling hasn't touched yet. You need the Reggie Millers and LeBron Jameses of the world. You need Justin Williams. Without Justin Williams, we're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are women out there that I'm not thinking of, and I hope that soon Tour de Femmes brings up those, because I mean, Europe's got, you know, like Marianne Vos, you know, Van Vleuten and all them, but
the Dutch,
we need the American version of that right now. Yeah. And maybe she's already out there and she's going to be it soon. And we just don't know yet. That would be great.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff going on in the United States. I think that's going to lead to more kids getting involved. Like look at the growth and the success of Nika. How much has that grown in the last like decade plus? That's huge. And that's getting a lot of kids on bikes. And we just need more people to step up and like kind of like, all right, you've got Nika.
Like
now we're
huge
gonna...
in California, isn't it?
Yes.
It's like it is. Big state championship.
It's big here too. I mean, we've got multiple people on our team that are out coaching teams. And there's a team right here in our backyard, the Freedom Fighters or something like that, or the Lacamas, whatever.
Yes, there is a group here in Camas.
Oh, I mean, really? We'll be out on a ride in Lacamas Park, and all of a sudden you'll see, no joke, like 20, 30, 40 kids out there on mountain bikes, and they've got leaders. I'm like, good on you guys. It's standing O. You guys are phenomenal. What can we do to help you out? So love seeing that stuff. But I think that we've got to be able to tap more. And we're talking about kids right now, even though we're supposed to be talking about women. But that's how you get it all started.
I think we're talking about marginalized groups in cycling. I think is what we're talking
exactly.
about. Yeah, because I think it is all interconnected because kids is little girls. And that's
the barrier is the cost of getting a bicycle. And that's the one thing that really sucks. Yes. But it doesn't have to be a $4,000 bike.
No.
It doesn't. And it could be a $1,000 bike. Well, even like a $750 bike.
This has been the problem. Like, you know, is that those ranges of bikes that are affordable, you know, what are they, like 6 months back order? I mean, how back order are a lot of these bikes?
Come around a little bit.
That's good. I mean, hopefully that continues. We're starting to see, like in the last 2 years, that was probably a primary issue.
Yeah, we'll see a big correction cycle over the next 6 months to 12 months because of, you know, things happening in the economy and things slowing down and the supply chains are going to start to catch up. And all of a sudden there's probably going to be like an over surplus of things because I think that they kind of maybe over predicted what the demand is going to be. And then all of a sudden people are going to be like, I don't need all that stuff now. And then, long story short, how do we get more kids on bikes and specifically more girls on bikes? And then how do we've got this whole, you talk about how this was like a poor man's sport.
Yeah.
And it was out of necessity for transportation. And that's probably where they decided like, hey, I'm actually good at this and I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I want to go race, but they don't have the time because they're taking care of too many things.
Working in the mines.
Exactly. And then all of a sudden it went from that to like, it went to a very exclusive, expensive, privileged sport. And it's like, there was no like in between, you know, bikes went from
because in America, it's always kind of been that. I could be wrong. You know, I think that there was definitely some access to lower socioeconomic and there still is, but that's the history of the sport. Yeah. There was a change. And I think that change happens with growth and money coming in is because now all of a sudden they realize, hey, people really like biking. How much can we charge?
Yeah.
And then it becomes more and more expensive. And really the original professionals in the Tour de France were actually sponsored riders. Yeah. And by sponsored riders, I mean a rich guy bought a bike and put a poor kid on it. And then if that poor kid won, he got the money. So that's how the sport started. It was glorified gladiators.
It's like horses.
there's great books on this. Yeah. The early Tour de France is, if you really want to know the history, this is why I was also hearing this argument, I didn't like it, of like, oh, like cycling is just inherently misogynistic. I'm like, no, it's not. It for a long time was a gladiator sport. And from old world, you don't throw a woman into a gladiator situation. That's just old world. You don't in Europe. And that's what the sport was for a long time. That's why a guy like Vingegaard is still like so celebrated. Like that was why all of a sudden he was so celebrated.
Yeah.
Is because Vingegaard was a fishmonger and like, people love that because that rings old Tour de France. Yeah, that's old Tour de France.
You can relate.
You can, exactly.
Did you see the picture of him up on the balcony when he was like greeting the crowds and see how many people showed up?
Yeah, I did see that.
It's like the whole country of Denmark showed up.
Did you guys also love that after each stage, you know who he was on the phone with? He was calling his wife.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. It's
his or girlfriend. Girlfriend, yeah. Who he has a young kid with.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I thought that was like every single time you see him on the Spanish, like the interviewer's trying to come up, he's just on the phone. He's like brushing away. He's like, no, I'm just talking to my family. I love that. Like,
it's good.
But you know, it's.
I think that he should have put it down to, you know, give Pogacar a little high five.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
That was a moment there. But anyway.
But you know, I think it's the Tour de Femme moving into this next stage has some available heroes now, and they need to build the stories around these heroes now because. Really, for if you're a young girl in America right now, you need that person you're going to look up to be like, I want to be that. Gymnastics has had those heroes for young women. So they can look up and be like, I want to be that.
Yeah.
They've had that in soccer, definitely. Now, soccer's got a large list of female heroes.
Yes.
We need that in cycling. And here's the thing that sinks is there's very fast, successful American cycling women, but not everybody's that personality.
Yeah.
We kind of just got to be brutally honest. Like sometimes you can be really fast and nobody really freaking cares because you're not interesting. Yeah. You know, it's just like, that's just the truth. But like, let's be honest. Why was TJ Van Garderen not somebody that America just rallied behind?
He's boring.
He's never boring had the results either.
He's boring.
He what?
He doesn't never have really results. Had results.
He did. I mean, he
great
was close,
results.
But
yeah.
He had a boring.
Pretty bad crash that kind of set him back when he was getting close to his heyday. But
yeah, Lance had cancer though, so yeah, no, I'm joking. I know. I'm just
that's, and drugs.
But we know TJ was probably come on. He was in that era. I'm sure TJ wasn't sparkling clean. But I'm saying they weren't that you. Tour de France and female cycling is one American hero away from kind of starting to bridge that gap.
Yeah. Were there any Americans?
Oh, this is the point I was about to make. There were, but I couldn't tell you what result era, how up there they were.
Yeah.
It's kind of like cyclocross right now. It's very Dutch European dominated.
Claire would disagree with that.
Yeah, that's true.
She's one of your top five in the world, right?
Yeah. But I mean, it's still,
and she kicked all of her butts out at short
but
track.
I think that even she would agree. I'm pretty sure she would agree if you told her, like, Clara, who's the best country right now in cycling for women?
Yeah.
It's got to be the Netherlands, right?
Yeah.
There was an American who was 10th Belgium overall. Was
close to. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, let's tell her story real quick.
Veronica Ewers.
Where's she from?
27-year-old American. She climbed up a couple of stages, up a couple of places in the final stages.
Great climber.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Yeah, where's she from? I think they got her name up there. I wonder if they have her bio.
Anyway, how do we get bikes to not be so damn expensive? How do we get cycling to be more widely accepted at the youth level as a staple sport? If we really want it to be a thing, our colleges need to accept it as a sport. And Lord knows our colleges have plenty of money. So let's get some cycling scholarships.
Oh, yeah, this is anybody who's like, oh, no, if the colleges have money for this, I'll call BS. I'm still throwing them money from a random school I went to graduate school for. Yeah, this is, but this is why I'm saying it goes back to that point before. Yeah. It's like we were saying is it can't be all on people like Jake to continue these very charitable things. It has to be the people with deep pockets need to say, do I care about this sport?
Yeah.
If you don't. Yeah. Hitch a hike. Nobody cares. But the more if conduits you do care, it's time to throw money at it.
The more conduits that we have into the sport and for people to go and do things with in the sport, as opposed to just like signing up and traveling and doing it on your own dime or maybe finding a Conti team that's going to make you sleep in your car and eat jelly beans and you know, try and race on that.
Hey, and you know what though, is I will say if there could be like Phil Guymon's book was really popular, Pro Cycling on a Dollar a Day or whatever the heck his name of his book was. You know, I would love to see a female American cyclist with that Phil Guymon personality that like write a book because of hard times come strong people, you know, strong people create good times. So like this is the era of women's cycling, probably like 3-4 years ago, let's say, that are going to be like the stories.
Right.
Now. So these are, they're the ones I get to tell in 10 years, the story of like, oh yeah, like they didn't pay me one year. I was literally homeless racing bicycles for a year. It's like, that's a story. Somebody would buy that book and be like, I'm interested now. Nobody wants to hear the story of, yeah, we were nicely funded and went to a nice hotel. And then we raced and my watts per kilo were 6.1 and I won the race easily. Nobody cares. Everybody wants to hear Van Vleuten right now. I was sick for three days. Oh yeah. And by the way, the other previous 20 years of my career, I was working full time so I could actually pay to do this.
This American, Veronica Ewers, she's actually from Moscow, Idaho.
Oh wow.
Which is right next to Pullman, Washington. So is where University of Washington is and the University of Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
So she's from that area. And she was a former soccer player and had interest from European soccer teams. So she has quite
great
an athletic background.
She blew her ACL and she gave up soccer? She became a cyclist to rehab an ACL? I bet you a buck that happened.
I would actually jump on that train too. I would bet that.
Heard that story so many times. And it's almost like you hear it so many times you see a woman like, hey, you used to be a soccer player, didn't you? And you look down, see the little scar on the knee. I'm like, oh, you tore it. Like, how did you know all this stuff about me? I'm like, sorry.
Or just like fill in any like tougher injury in football, basketball, or soccer for anybody. It's like, I'm going straight cycling.
Say that. You know, the other very cool part about the last stage for the women's tour was they went up the Super Planche del I keep butchering the name.
Oh, I only know Planche. That's the only part of that name
Planche,
that I know.
Super Planche Belfi.
Brought to you by Swift.
Yeah, brought to you by Swift. And you know, the men raced up that as well during their tour, but they stopped where the road stopped. The women,
yeah, they went past that.
They went past that up the gravel section, which was even steeper, and finished up past the gravel section. And it was actually funny when Van Vleuten was crossing the finish line. There was a motorbike following her up the super steep part. It was so steep. He fell over.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that video.
He was like,
that's awesome.
And the cameraman had to like pull off his camera and run up the
probably
road.
Probably dying, sucking wind.
Fell over.
Oh, jeez.
They're at pretty decently high altitude at the top of that, too. It's I mean, they're cool.
We got going on Phil Guymon. Who would be a good counterpart? We could get. He would be the perfect person to go announce the
Why don't we get him?
Phil Guymon.
Oh, yeah, I would love to hear Phil.
Kristen Armstrong or something like that. The two of those together.
Or who they had on the Zwift, Allison Tedrick.
Yeah, either one of those, or all three of them.
Tedrick, I think. Yeah,
Kristen Armstrong raced at a high level for many many years. Is going to know all of the background and can fill things. And Phil knows cycling extremely well, and he's
color
guy.
Yeah,
you get Tedrick in there to kind of balance it all out.
And she's raced with all those people and done all these races.
Yeah, so she has all the personal stories.
Peacock,
does
if you're listening,
like,
there's your trio right there.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think Phil would be open to that. Phil's a good guy to drive the sport in a different direction because he's thinking forward a lot of time. Like, I would love to see Phil come into that. That's because think of the Tour de France. This is what I was really thinking this when me, David, and Kim were talking about this. Is I would love to see the Tour de Femme, all those things that we don't like about cycling. Mm-hmm. Is all from the male sport, the last 100-some years of professional development around this culture of males professional cycling. I would love to see women's cycling say, we don't need to do what the men's races is doing.
Yeah.
Why not have a random Grand Tour stage that also has like a mountain bike stage and a cyclocross? Why not? Like, why not do things like sure. Like, I mean,
the riders don't want that.
That's why I love that gravel. Oh, I bet Voss would love that. I bet Voss would be like, let's throw a cyclist cross stage in the middle of this.
Most of the riders were like, the gravel's too much. It's too much of a liability for the GC riders. It's too risky. But it made it so much more interesting.
And for every idea that gets tossed out, they'll bring it back a little bit. But be aggressive and do weird stuff. Do stuff that's outside of what male cycling does throughout the year, because I only like male cycling because I've been watching it for so gosh darn long. If somebody was asking me, like, what's wrong with male pro cycling? I'd be like, oh, there's a lot of things. I don't even know where to start, honestly. But I watch it because of the history and it was part of my childhood. But if this, as a different sport, if women's cycling became like, we're going to kind of forge a different path here, I think they could make themselves really cool. And not just like the B race of every men's race that comes. Like I don't want it to be, oh, here's the Paris-Roubaix Femmes the day after Paris-Roubaix. Here's the Tour of Flanders.
Make
fans.
It be theirs. Let them own it. And sometimes
which is
you
dangerous. I get it, because that's you know, financially it's dangerous.
You need to throw things against the wall sometimes to see what sticks. I can't tell you how many different things we've tried, from the Dialed Cycling Lab to the Dialed Cycling Team to all the different things. Yeah. Oh my gosh!
Hello.
Oh, is that Becca? Hi, Becca.
sorry, everybody that's listening to this. I've had like 50 people trying to get a hold of me. Josh Bonda says hi, by the way. He tried to FaceTime. I think he needs help putting his rear derailleur back on. He's in Colorado getting ready to do
Boulder 73.
He's doing Boulder 70.3. Yeah.
So,
Josh, let's do it over the podcast right now. Let's see.
All right. Anyway, but you got to throw things against the wall. And we've thrown a lot of things, and some things worked and some things didn't.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, just most recently, we've been trying to find a stupid communication platform. And I know you were a little resistant to it at first. And
Slack.
Tried all these different things. We finally jumped on Slack, and that was a recommendation from another team that we're helping out, and they're helping us out with a couple things. And it's going to be fantastic. And
is that POA is on Slack, or is it
Bunk Collective?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
Anyway, so long story short, like, you've got to throw different things against the wall. And sometimes it's going to be like, sometimes it's not. And sometimes you're going to like, oh, well, maybe that wasn't this new tangent. Like, do that. Make it theirs. Yeah. Make it their own thing. Let them own it and make it something interesting that people want to watch. And you're not going to make everybody happy, but.
And I mean, I know I'm always biased towards this, but they can take a page out of the book of triathlon right now. Triathlon is, I mean, the sport has been driven by Ironman for a long time and Ironman sucks. So it's time to move into something different.
Sure.
And, you know, PTO came around with Deep Pockets. It's those deep pockets we're talking about, but it's a group that is, well, guys specifically, but a group that's okay. Let's balance the males and females and let's make this interesting. Let's do different types of racing. And it's, they're trying to make it as engaging as possible. And I think if cycling's got an even bigger platform than triathlon by a lot, So if the women were like, we don't need this to be a version of male pro cycling. We can do whatever the heck we want here.
Yeah.
And they just take that and run with it.
So I got a list of a few more things because we're getting a little long on this, yeah. But I want to just throw a few things at you. And if anything speaks to you, let me know. We need to get more women interested, obviously. So let's talk about how we do that. A, we talk about it. We have to talk about it and talk about it and talk about it some more. That's what we're doing right now.
Yes,
talk about it.
That helps.
Tell people about it. Tell the story.
Also, on a side note, and this isn't to disparage us, but women need to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because women need to watch it. Oh, I mean, like, because let's be honest, like, nobody really cares if us three are watching it. Like, really. You know, I mean, like, yes, I'm going to still watch recaps because of cycycling. I would watch cycling if
it
was
fun and it's exciting.
And it's exciting and new, but it needs to be women that talk about it.
Yeah, for sure. The next thing, watch it.
Yep.
You actually got to go watch it. I'm guilty. I still have to go. Yeah, I was out of town. I was camping and I didn't even have cell service. So I've got to go back and watch it. And I've got to go make the time.
And like the NBC, whatever the recaps.
I'm sure. Do they have recaps still on Peacock?
Yep.
Okay.
So I was actually watching
them on Peacock.
I was watching Peacock, but I also watched Lantern Rouge's recaps. He did a great recap.
Oh, yeah.
I know a lot of people down talk to Lantern Rouge. He did a great job of the Tour de France. I thought he did the best recap I had seen.
Yeah. He's good. I watch his stuff.
He's on YouTube.
YouTube. Yep.
Celebrate it.
Yep.
Got to celebrate it. And like, damn it, ESPN and all the other.
Yes.
Put it up there, talk about it, celebrate
Burn
it.
Burn down ESPN.
Cycling's not a real sport.
ESPN will go. Oh my God. ESPN will play the hot dog eating contest like it's
World Poker Tour like it's championships.
Cornhole.
Yeah, cornhole.
We're not going to put on triathlon. Track. They didn't even they barely mentioned the world championship for track and field.
I think it's because they don't have the broadcasting rights.
Well, most people are stupid. No, I'm joking. I'm just saying. Yes. Most people are like, what does most of this terrible country want to watch? Cornhole.
But they can still recap it.
They
can still recap it.
That's the main thing.
So go watch it on GCN. Go watch it on Lantern Rouge. Go watch it anywhere you can. And for us, maybe it's like, hey, put the information out there so people know where to go watch it.
But I would rather even support these things like GCN, all of those. And just, I would love if ESPN just burned down and died one day. That'd be great. That and big news coverage of that stuff, it's terrible. Yeah. It's terrible.
Do more to support your local youth. You've got to do that, and especially the girls. You know, like, you got to love the kids out there, like little Whitney Hayden on our team. She's fantastic, and she's got a very bright future. Her little brother's going to be fantastic, too. But, you know, celebrate that stuff and you know, make sure that you're putting it out there to show people what it is that she's doing. Like, and if there's other kids out there that you know that are especially young female youth, celebrate them and talk about the things that they're doing and tell the parents. Get the parents involved, too.
Yeah.
You just got to do that stuff. And the last thing is, I think we need to have like a documentary that's done on like a full, like, imagine if you had like a full recap documentary of the whole Tour de France.
Yep.
That would be fantastic. And even more so.
Well, it's like what Netflix just did this year with the Tour de France.
We're going to get that.
Yeah.
We'll get the whole, all the inside scoop from Netflix show here.
And that's
going to
be fantastic.
That for 2023, I would love to see them do just a whole like Tour de France. That would be great.
You know, they've done it before with the Argo Shimano team with Marcel Kittel back in the day. I'm talking about their, I can't remember what their little mantra was.
I'm trying to remember this now. Yeah,
1-9-3-4-6 one for all kind of thing.
The bigger one was the Movie Star documentary that was out on Netflix too.
Yes.
I've heard the name of that, but it was in Spanish, so I had to watch it with subtitles the whole time.
And there was another one too that was going through. Which team was it? Total Energies, maybe. But it was the chef and the nutritionist.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
And
it was
them.
Me and Cassie actually watched that too.
That was really good.
Great.
And I was like, why aren't you doing more of these?
I could be wrong. Those might not have been Netflix. My bad. Those might have been another caring service, but another big caring service regardless.
So anyway, more of that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Because it's interesting and it brings the human element in there and it starts to give you an appreciation of all the things that these people go through. And if you can make the personality shine, people are going to love this stuff.
Yep.
And they're out there. You just got to go get them.
Yep.
I'd much rather watch that than freaking cornhole.
Oh my God.
I'd much rather watch that than people playing poker with each other.
It was the day of, I think it was the last day of the Tour de France.
Mm-hmm.
I turned on NPR and NPR was going to talk about their sports that day. I'm going to disparage NPR here too. Screw NPR. I watch it every single morning. I hate them now. The last day of the Tour de France, they decide on their sports segment that they were going to talk about how Joey Chestnut broke some fried chicken.
Do you like how he's talking like he's on NPR radio right now?
I was.
This is classic. I love this.
I was in my car driving to work. I almost wanted to just turn around and be like, I'm done today. Like, this is. I was like, I.
They didn't talk about the tour.
Just say it, Evan. Just say it. I'll bleep it out.
I was so, so mad at that. I'm listening to this. I was like, NPR, you're the worst. Like, that was. That was terrible. They always have a sports about like, hey, let's update you on the world of sports. They could have said even a small blip of the Tour de France was won by, no. We're going to talk about Joey Chestnut just broke a record on fried chicken.
That's what Americans are watching.
Fried chicken?
This is, chicken. I was like, what on God's green? Like, if you want to personify what's wrong with us right now, it's like that. That's that right there. It's the fact that more people would want
to
talk about
So you
that.
Get to hit the cancel button on one, NPR or ESPN?
Oh, that's tough. ESPN.
Evan's head just exploded.
Because I still need NPR's fair news and all that. But no, my God, like ESPN, no, ESPN can go. It's, yeah. It's just, I mean, I get it that like you need clicks, but is there any respect left in news? Any?
No, they're just selling.
My God. I was like, are you, I always wanted to call, not that NPR, I'd pick up my call and call in and be like, hey, I have another sports thing for you in case you were, the most popular bike race in the world just ended, just in case you were wondering. I know that Joey news is huge, but that's.
Seriously, more eyeballs globally on the Super Bowl or on Tour de France? It's Tour de France.
More I actually eyeballs. Have heard that stat it before, is. Actually. And I think, yeah, I saw because I know I was trying to talk with somebody about football versus soccer popularity, that the eyeballs on the World Cup dwarf the Super Bowl. But it's just, we're so in our American bubble that we're, you know, it's very like that's, you know, us. But I mean, really, I didn't even realize that when we were in Europe for a short bit.
But this rule is still like the largest one day
audience.
We're
talking money, dude. Yeah. We're talking the amount of money that pumps through the Super Bowl is incomparable. Insane. Yeah. There is no comparison.
Bonkers.
Yep.
Anything else that you guys want to say on that? That's my little list.
No, I had my sound off moment on ESPN there. What if we get canceled? Do they have like, you know, how many ESPN listeners do we have on this?
Two.
Apologize to all the ESPN people I just insulted. Watch, there's some like poor ESPN employees been trying ESPN. To pitch female cycling to them. She's like, Evan's disparaging me and I'm trying to push this forward.
I still watch football and basketball and some baseball. I still watch that occasionally. I kind of do. Not as much as I used to.
Yeah, I used to watch it way more. But yeah.
I quit football.
Yeah.
But I didn't quit baseball. I still love my baseball, but I don't really pay attention to it because...
I'll keep up on the NBA, but the NFL I'm kind of tired of. So,
gotcha. Yeah. All right. Any closing thoughts on that? You guys?
I think it's good.
Watch your women's cycling.
Watch
folks.
It. Yep.
The female Giro d'Italia is coming up soon.
Yep.
Isn't it? It's a different order than the men's. So it's France, then Italy, instead of Italy, then France.
Yep.
So, yep.
Gotcha. Cool. All right. Let's move on to one last thing. I'd usually go with Matt LeGrand. He's not here, but he did put out some videos recently. So go to Matt LeGrand or youtube.com/MLeGrand.
All the way from North Carolina.
YouTubes. Go watch some Matt dancing around on the beach.
Yes.
Shirt untucked. Yes. White shirt. White shorts.
Yeah, from the music video. Christmas album.
Evan Price, one last thing.
That was a niche joke. Okay. One last thing. God, I just hope my leg doesn't hurt tomorrow is basically it. So, yeah. That's it. If you ride a mountain bike, you know, practice it a bunch if you want to do a hard race. It's my best advice.
Hey, Evan, I didn't crash once this week.
I'm not surprised that you didn't.
Not once.
And I even think if you were in Telluride, you probably wouldn't have crashed. Maybe there's one since you could have thought about crashing, but you probably would have made it through okay.
Lance, one last thing.
We've got a couple of big road races coming up this weekend. We have our state championship crit happening at the University of Portland for OBRA in the Portland area. And then we have our state championship road race happening in the Kings Valley area on Sunday. So crit race championships on Saturday, road race championships on Sunday. Come race your bike.
Are you going to be at both of them?
I have no idea.
I was saying earlier that I was a hard no on this. If it's going to be hot, I'm just kidding. I might go out. We'll see.
I have yet to make a decision whether I'll be either at either one.
Yeah. The tough thing for me right now, it's got way too many things going on in life. And yeah, if I can figure out a way to put together some fitness this weekend, I feel like I'm feeling all right. Maybe I'll go out there and mix it up. I don't know who's going to be with me out there from our team, but
who knows?
We'll see.
Yeah.
My one last thing, I don't know. Mother Nature, can you turn down the temperature just a little bit? We're always complaining about the weather, but just go outside, enjoy the outside.
It's hot.
Go ride your bike. It always makes you feel better. Encourage your friends and family to go ride bikes. And if you get an old bike, give it to a kid. Maybe that'll become the next Lance Armstrong?
No, Greg LeMond.
Greg LeMond?
Lance Armstrong didn't officially win any Tour de France. Greg LeMond did.
That's true.
Yeah.
Evan is so... tuned into his phone right now that we're trying to goad him into something.
I just keep on hearing LeMond over here, but.
All right. We do appreciate everybody listening. We will be back next week with another one. Will Matt LeGrand be back? maybe?
I don't know.
Possibly?
I think so.
All right, I got to go. There's too many text messages I got to return. So thank you for listening. Until next week, bye for now.